I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we meet, work and study, the Awabakal and Worimi peoples. I extend that to the land on which our listeners meet. I pay respect to elders past, present and emerging. Thank you to our sponsor, Espresso Warriors Katara. The CCJS would like to invite you to our inaugural Investigators Panel on 6th of April at 6 p.m, an event unlike any other where you will learn firsthand about what it takes to be an investigator from experts in the field. Welcome back to the UON Crim Podcast, Episode 3. I am your host, Jessica Horn. Today's episode is by far one of my favourites. I talk with Selena the Stripper, a stripper and sex work activist based in the United States. I talk with Selena about what sex work really entails and the decriminalisation of sex work, both in the United States and Australia. Selena's mission is to destigmatise stripping and to advocate for safer and more protected working conditions for sex workers. I hope you enjoy listening as much as I did and gain an insight as to what this industry is truly about. Hi, Selena.
Hi.
Please introduce yourself. Tell me a little about you.
Hi, everybody. I am Selena the Stripper. I have been a sex work activist and writer for the past, I would say, like 4 years. And I write all about my experiences working in the dancing industry in the United States, but also my experiences escorting and sugaring, and my general thoughts around the quasi-legality of the sex industry in the United States as it is. Because this is an Aussie audience, you may not be aware, but there's this weird situation that we have in the United States where we have strip clubs, and in strip clubs, what you're allowed to do varies significantly from state to state. And then also federally, what you're allowed to do as far as sexual touch is heavily regulated. Full prostitution, or full service sex work as we call it, is criminalized. And even though there's been a push lately to create something more like the Nordic model, where the customers are punished and the sex workers are not, that overall it's still completely criminalized. And I could give you an example of what stripping is like in California.
Yeah.
It actually varies from county to county. So I live in LA County, but if you go south 2 hours to San Diego, you have to go and pay $400 to get a license to even begin dancing. And as part of that license, you have to get registered with the police.
Wow.
You have to get 3D live scan fingerprinted, and you have to get this adult entertainer permit. So it creates a major financial barrier for people who are interested in getting in the industry, which is difficult because stripping is one of those industries that is a sanctuary occupation. And I mean that in the sense that you don't have to have a certain level of education. It's not about, you know, you don't have to speak fluent English. You can have a criminal record.
Yeah.
A lot of the things that would normally exclude people from employment are not problems for getting into dancing.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people who are more, who need that kind of money, who have those barriers in other occupations, turn to stripping or sex work generally to make, you know, decent money. You're able to support yourself. You can live in a very expensive state like California, and you can have a pretty comfortable life. But those barriers create major obstacles to people having access to that kind of financial stability.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so the other thing is it's checkered across all industries. So porn, again, state by state, it's different. Most states either have laws banning the filming of pornography or have condom laws, which mean that in order to film a sex scene, you have to use a condom in the scene, which if you ever watched porn is not the most common occurrence.
Mm-hmm.
But there are states like Florida where they don't have condom laws, and that's where most porn ends up getting shot in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be more popular in California, but the condom laws kind of cut into that as well. They've had a little bit of trouble regulating fan sites like OnlyFans because it's internet based. It's also not even based in the United States. It's based out of the UK.
Mm-hmm.
So the other issue with digital platforms is each digital platform has to conform to the laws of each country where you are, you know, looking at the app or posting the data, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So really again, tricky. There's a million one regulatory hurdles, a million one ways that sex work looks like, depending mm-hmm. on the industry. And so that's something that I'm really interested in. And then I talk a lot about to my audience so mm-hmm. that people can kind of understand what this really colorful, quilted landscape looks like.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's quite an interesting area, and a lot of people think it's one thing, but it's really 10 other things. It's really interesting. And how did you get into the sex work industry?
I got into the sex work industry after college. I had a bunch of friends who were dancers,
mm-hmm.
Strippers, and they were just making a lot of really great art. My background is art. Yeah. I went to art school for university, and so I was just really interested in their work. One of my friends was a fabulous poet, writing about her experiences, just learning about the club, learning about her body and her sexuality and dealing with the trauma of being assaulted.
Yeah.
Another person was dealing with the stigma of dancing, but also being queer
mm-hmm.
and her family not accepting her identity or predicting that she would end up on the pole as yeah. if that was a bad thing. But, you know, she was rebellious and resilient, and one of my exes, they were a stripper, and they started doing these guerrilla performances on campus as this kind of like manic stripper named Cindy, and they would just turn any place into a strip club.
Oh my gosh.
It was just really great, super fascinating, and I loved how everybody was taking this. And so I kind of felt a kinship, and I didn't know if I could do it. I wanted to, but I was scared. And then eventually, because I had a terrible job that was not paying me enough, and I was really struggling, they were like, you should just do it. Just do it. You're a performer. You would do well. And so finally, I decided to do it. I quit my job, and I hadn't been officially hired by the club yet, but I went in and auditioned, and actually the first time they were like, actually we just hired 3 people today, come back another day.
So
I was gutted, but they were like, actually come back tomorrow, we'll let you audition. And so I came back, and they were like, just come back early. So I did, and they hired me, and then I worked that exact night. They hired me on the spot. I worked that night, yeah. And the rest is history.
Yeah, wow. This is amazing. What do you hope to achieve in your efforts as a sex work activist, and what do you do in this position?
Well, I hope that people will start to have a more complex understanding of what the sex work umbrella looks like and the various ways that it isn't just one thing or another. Like, it isn't just empowering just as much as it isn't just completely disempowering. It's work.
Mm-hmm.
There are a bunch of different workplaces. And I guess regardless of how you may feel about whether or not that work should exist, it does exist. It's not going to stop existing. It's existed for thousands of years. It is literally known as the oldest profession. And so you're not going to legislate away the oldest profession. You're just going to make things more harmful, more difficult, and more painful for people, the people who depend on it most. if you try to make it less accessible to them. Because people will do sex work. In the end, honestly, like, a lot of legislation around it is just harm reduction, in my opinion. It's keeping people out of prison. It's keeping people away from having those carceral histories. It's keeping policing away, because police are, at least in the United States, are pretty inherently violent. And I know that not everybody agrees with that, but I think it's pretty straightforward. In the United States, we have a prison system that enables legalized slavery. That's what the 13th Amendment actually says.
Wow.
That, you know, slavery is abolished except in the case of prison labor.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, so what I want is for people to have a more complicated understanding. I want people to see the human elements of people working in the sex business. And I want people to take a more compassionate approach to the way that it's thought about. And I'd also love to dismantle stigma, you know? It's definitely not easy being a public figure who is a sex worker.
Yeah.
I have my own internal struggles. I deal with my own feelings of stigma or my own feelings of not being as important as I should believe I am, you know? Like, not feeling as valuable to society or as seen. And, you know, it's hard to have, like, my internal struggles while I'm trying to be a positive icon or share these messages.
For sure.
And even, it's hard to talk about even things like trauma, you know? Like, there are definitely traumas that happen. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's important to show, like, the multidimensionality of this, and so that's what I really care about.
That's great. And since entering the industry, how have you seen it change, particularly in regard to attitudes and perspectives around being a sex worker?
Honestly, like, people are a lot more aware. I'll start with strippers.
Mm-hmm.
I think that strippers overall have gotten a lot more aware of themselves as, like, a collective body of people, of workers, and they have started to identify much more as sex workers, I think, overall. Whenever I first started, there was not a sense of, like, communal identity.
Yep.
It's very much like, in the United States, there's, like, a really strong sense of individualism.
Mm-hmm.
There's not very much of a collective identity. A lot of times we're very divided, especially whenever it comes to our labor.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that with the greater visibility of the word sex work, people have started to identify with it and started to identify with the memes that a lot of great creators have made, you know?
Yeah.
Things that really encapsulate their struggle, and they're like, wow, like, I really see myself in this joke about, you know, whatever banality. And I think that that's, like, really started to unite people and started to see, like, the struggle as common. And I think overall, societally, I've been surprised to hear more and more people use the term sex work. Because I remember not too long ago, I mean, people were pretty commonly using, you know, terms like prostitute or hooker or whore.
Mm-hmm.
All these words that are either based in criminalized terminology, like prostitute, or based in pejoratives, like hooker and whore. Now, hooker and whore have been reclaimed by, you know, some sex workers who feel like those terms are, you know, they want to reclaim them, much in the way that LGBTQ have reclaimed the word queer. Mm-hmm. But it's also still a punchy word, and I wouldn't say, for if you haven't been in the industry, that you're allowed to use that word.
Yeah.
It's not for everybody. But I think overall, I was surprised. I mean, even John Oliver, the comedian, host of, what is it, Last Week Tonight or something like
that? Sorry, I don't know.
Anyway, John Oliver's show, he's a great, he's just a great political pundit. But he did a whole segment, a whole show on sex work and really broke down the issue within the United States. And I thought that he did a really great job. I mean, I was not upset at it.
Yeah.
And I found more and more people have actually pretty complicated understandings of just of what the whole situation is and what it means to the people who work it. In the United States, because we're a very Christian country, we have puritanical Christian roots, which is maybe the least tolerant of Christian traditions. Yeah. Because of that conservatism that we inherited, it can be challenging to have conversations about sex and sexuality. It's a real hot button issue. But I hope that we'll see more and more politicians speaking out for sex work. I've actually been surprised to see a number of like the newer representatives and in Congress speaking directly in favor of decriminalizing sex work.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been really positive. And this has all happened within the past like decade, I guess. While we've had a lot of setbacks, including SESTA FOSTA and some other harmful internet legislation issues, we've also seen a lot of progress in the minds and hearts of the people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's good. And what would you say are the biggest misconceptions about sex work or being a sex worker?
Well,
when to start?
So like one I think is really well illustrated in this law in the state of Alaska. There's this law that said that sex work can't be used, and it's not a valid term. And they changed all things that are related to sex work into sex trafficking.
Oh my god.
And so there was like a case of a woman who was brought to criminal court for trafficking herself. So it's this broad like misconception that there is no autonomy, there is no choice, there is no consensual sex labor, which is not true at all. There's a lot of consent, there's a lot of negotiating consent.
Yeah.
Because if you can't consent, then you can't break consent, and then that's a whole other
issue of
you know, just issues. So there's really complex negotiations of consent in sex work, which I think unfortunately makes it really difficult to handle in a criminal court system, because it's like you may be agreeing to certain sex acts, but you're not agreeing to all sex acts, and you're agreeing to them under these conditions, under the payment of this amount of money for this amount of time on this day. Like it's not a forever consent to everything all the time. It's very strict parameters. But if you're trying to argue a case about sexual assault because somebody didn't respect some of those parameters,
it's hard.
It is very hard, and courts are not sympathetic to sex workers. I mean, there's been law, or I forget where it came about exactly, but it was, there's this term called like no humans involved. And that was used pretty regularly to describe violence against sex workers. We were not considered to be human.
Oh my
God. So an incident was considered to be no humans involved if it involved a sex worker. And so there's all kinds of terrible stuff like that exists on the books, because we don't have a nuanced discussion about this, because a lot of people are very focused on the all or nothing.
Yeah.
So another misconception is that everybody, I mean, there's like there's so many misconceptions, like they range from like completely silly to like absolutely terribly harmful, you know? I mean, what, there's like the, everybody's just absolutely like sexually ravenous all the time. And that's not true at all. People really don't have like an idea of what like sexual performance means, you know, or providing a service. I think people think that it's like this spontaneous act of passion, but it's really like, we're like your massage worker or something. Like, yeah. We operate on schedules. We provide a service for X amount of time. And it's not like we're like, it's not like you get a massage and you ask your masseuse, like, oh, how was that for you?
Yeah, exactly. And I guess, would you say like you practice like, you know, your dancing and it's very structured, would you say? Like it's, yeah, you have a routine.
No, it's improvisational. So yeah. The fun thing about like dancing on stage is that it's like there, it's completely improvisational. Like essentially there is a way to dance like a stripper. And you kind of learn the pattern of movements or like the way you're supposed to move, but it's completely improvisational whenever you get on stage. You're just kind of, it's interesting. Like it's really kind of hard to explain. But it's completely improvisational, even though it's also structured around, like, a set dance form. But nobody's, like, really written about stripping as a dance form. I mean, they call it, like, exotic pole nowadays, I guess. It's really been appropriated by the pole community as, like, exotic flow or something, which is not really what it is either.
Yeah.
But it is, like, there are certain rules, there are certain patterns of movement. If you've ever been to a strip club, then there's just, like, a way that you move that is dancing like a stripper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what annoys you the most about your job?
I mean, annoy is a hard word.
Yeah.
Like, there are things that, like, really anger me about my job.
Yeah.
So, like, there are annoying things, like, you know, the stage paint sometimes gets on my clothes, and then my clothes are, like, a black color, and I'm like, God, I hate that.
Now I have to wash them twice. Like,
that's, like, a really annoying thing, or just, like, you know, that they put a single-ply toilet paper in the bathroom, whatever.
Oh, those my gosh. Yes.
But, like, the things that are really frustrating are, like, the fact that we have to tip out every night, and it becomes, it can be a substantial amount of money depending on where you work. I mean, some clubs, like, you're tipping out a couple $100s every night.
Yeah.
Another thing that's annoying in California is because the clubs are poorly regulated as far as their wage theft issues, they make you pay your wage taxes. So I don't know how it works in Australia, but in the United States, you get a wage, and part of that, your employer should be paying a wage tax on that. That goes toward your final tax filing that you file once a year.
Yeah, much similar.
They actually make us earn, so they make us pay our wages entirely, and it's only by the dances we sell. So I have to sell, like $100 in dances to get paid my minimum wage. And out of that, they take out the taxes. So this is all money that I have to earn from scratch. It's not like they give it to me. It's not like they guarantee that wage goes to me, even though they should be paying me hourly.
Yeah.
Because they're doing a lot of legal stuff. So they make me pay my hourly, and then to the dancers who don't achieve that quota of paying their own wage, they get unwanted shifts, so they get pushed into being a day shift worker, or they get fired.
Wow.
And so it's just, it's a really messed up situation right now in California.
Yeah, that is not something that I would ever have thought about. You know, there's a misconception that sex workers get paid cash in hand, and you know, they walk out with all their tips. So yeah, that's a really really interesting.
You kind of do. It's like a hybrid of that. So, okay. Like, in California, we became employees instead of independent contractors.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as employees, you are entitled to, like, hourly wage or salary. And then with that, like, certain things, like a number of days off. And you can get maternity leave. And you can get, some sick leave, stuff like that, just depending on how many hours you are counted as an employee. But they keep us part-time. If you're a full-time employee, you would get those benefits. But because they keep us part-time, we don't get those benefits. So you get that. And then whatever tips or additional dances you sell, you get that money cash in mm-hmm. your hand. But it's still it's a really convoluted process. Like, it's just a bureaucratic nightmare. Like, if it doesn't make sense to you, it's because it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
It's not because you're, not getting something. It's because it's, it's total madness.
Yeah. And what is it really like working in a strip club? It's common for people to look at strip clubs with a feeling of, pity for the workers and to construct this backstory as to why they're working there.
I mean, it depends so much on the day. Like, it can, at worst, it's boring. It's because it's a lot of time waiting, you get there and then sometimes it's busy, sometimes the club is empty, and then you're just kind of twiddling your thumbs, you're on your phone or you're chatting with your friends. Thankfully, it's a pretty chill environment at my club. Because weed is legal in California, people just go out and smoke weed, or they'll have a couple shots of whatever alcohol they brought in.
Yeah.
Hang with their friends, talk and stuff like that, or just look at Instagram until customers come in, and then you try and talk to customers, and customers they range from, I don't know, from kind of boring to relatively interesting. They're men, and not all men are very good at conversation, they have their idiosyncrasies. Everybody's a little bit different. Some people come in, they're really nervous and shy. Some people are more gregarious and like to make people laugh. Some customers are just broke and they can't really afford to be there, so they kind of try and sneak into the darkness so they can get talked to. And the dancers kind of have a sense of what kind of money people have just by how they walk into the club.
Yeah.
But it's like any other workplace, Some days are good, some days are fun. It can be nice to be around your friends. Whenever you work a shift with your friends, it's even better. My club is very sweet. All of the dancers are just so kind, and it's like a little kind of sisterhood in the club. Yeah. Even though not everybody identifies as a woman, a lot of people are non-binary like myself, or have masculine pronouns, things like that. They're trans sex workers, trans strippers who just put on female drag. But it's truly a variety. I mean, on the frustrating end, I've had clients who have shorted me for tips and who have been rude to me and made rude remarks about my appearance or whatever, things like that, or their beliefs about women, which are truly outlandish. On the sweet end, I've had customers who, I have a customer who I have a little private reading club with, and we just read great literature, and
I love that.
We talk about theory, and he calls me his holistic dom, because I've encouraged him to sleep and eat well and to take breaks and to give himself time, and we're trying to work through his PTSD together.
That's so special.
Yeah, I mean, I've had other clients who I've really talked through really traumatic times, and I've been there and helped them to get through really difficult things. I start to know my clients' lives pretty intimately, their families, their kids, their ex-wife or wife.
Yeah.
It's truly just a mix of people. I mean, I've even had female clients. I had a woman who I was performing services with, and she had just lost her her partner to cancer, and she was trying to get back into her sexuality in a partnered way, but she wasn't looking for anything serious. She just wanted to have the space to explore and feel all of the pain that she was going to feel, you know, because whenever you have your intimacy connected to an intimate partner and you lose that person, there's just a lot of, you know, residual sadness and residual connection to them. And it's like, it may be joyful, but it's also tearful. And so I was kind of like her training wheels, where she was able to cry after and, you know, deal with all of those mixed emotions. And then now she's has a partner and she's moved on and she's doing great. So it's just the variety of people that I deal with is very varied.
Yeah.
And so there's no central experience. It's really been all over the place. So I can't really characterize it as any particular thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it varies even from club to club. Some clubs are a party the whole time. Some clubs are just very quiet. Some clubs are just passing through clubs. Some are completely themed, where you just, it's just like, there's one called like the Devil's Point, and they do all kinds of fun nights, like stripper karaoke night, and they have all kinds of dress up parties. And
yeah,
it's just more of a, it's just an interesting experience. There's a lot of creativity that goes into clubs.
Yeah, I guess it's just like any workplace, like each workplace does their own thing, has their own things that they do. So yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
And how does sex work liberate women, people of colour, and non-binary people?
Well, I mean, I think it can be liberating to people. I think it just depends. I would not say that it is inherently liberating. I think that it is something that it just depends a lot on your experience. I think the real liberation has to come with like economic liberation. Because if you're just doing sex work and people are treating you like shit and you're not getting paid enough money for it, that's not
a liberating
experience.
Yeah.
But maybe if like people are kind of treating you like shit, but you're making a ton of money, maybe that's also kind of weirdly liberating, you know? Like, okay, well, I can get through people being dicks, and if I'm going to make, like, you know, $10,000 a month or whatever, I don't know. Like,
yes.
But I think somewhere in between is where I fall. It's like, sometimes it feels great and I have a good time because I have respectful clients and they pay me well, and I feel like my time is being valued and I have economic security, and that feels great. And then sometimes, like earlier this year, it was kind of difficult. We had a real slowdown, and that typically happens. There are seasons in stripping. The winter time tends to be a little bit slower, but once the springtime hits, people come back out and like they spend more money. So it's kind of, it's funny that way.
Yeah.
Again, I think it's economic liberation. It's like, what's liberating is being able to afford rent and food and the ability to enjoy something and not have to think about, you know, am I going to be able to afford to eat?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So that's what I think is liberating. And also, getting to choose your hours is also pretty liberating. Not everybody's able to, but for me, being able to, like, I work 2 days a week at the club, and then the rest of the time is mine to decide what I'm going to do with it. Mm-hmm. And so I can focus on all of the other things that I care about, like being on this podcast.
Thank you.
So I have the time to write and to work for my organization and to focus on other things that bring me joy and give me life. And in that sense, that is really liberating.
Yeah. And with COVID, how did that sort of affect sex work? Because obviously people were locked down, you know, places had to shut. How did that affect the industry?
Yeah, well, it shut down the stripping industry for a while. And it was definitely scary. I mean, all of a sudden, my club was shut down and every other club across the country was shut down during the initial parts of the pandemic. Of course, the United States is a real wild card when it comes to our health policies, to say the least. So we really made peace with a startling amount of deaths due to COVID-19. Mm-hmm. And so kind of related, some clubs covertly opened up to a small select clientele that they invited back. Mm-hmm. Some of them skirted the rules and opened as restaurants because of kind of how they file in their taxes or something. I don't know. Like they identify as restaurants. And so they were allowed to open up whenever restaurants were allowed to open.
Yeah.
Others took on more interesting creative solutions. One created this thing that they formerly called Boober Eats, which is they sent the strippers out and with masks and delivered food from the restaurant. And there's, I think they did like a little, like they flash the customers or something like that, you know, or do like a little door dance and then go.
Yeah.
They did other clubs set up like a stripper drive-through. So they had stages outside of the club. The strippers would dance on the poles and people would stay in their cars and drive through and enjoy a little strip show.
Yeah.
Although it was all over the place. The creativity was pretty remarkable.
Yeah. But,
you know, with varying degrees of safety, of real safety for the strippers. Another thing that happened was, well, so another issue with stripping is that not all of the clubs don't tend to declare all of the dancers that they actually hire for tax purposes, especially in states that are like outside of California, because California is now much more heavily regulated in that sense, they have to declare us. But if you go to like the middle of nowhere, or if you go to, I think even like Texas or something, you know, a lot of these clubs were not declaring their dancers. And so whenever the United States government started issuing pandemic assistance, strippers were not completely sure if they were included. Yeah. Because they didn't know if their employer had filed them as an actual employee. There was also fears about, you know, a lot of strippers are not out. They're not out to their family. Some dancers like live with their parents and their parents don't know that they dance. So if you are suddenly getting pandemic assurance or pandemic assistance and your employer is a strip club, then that could create major housing problems and insecurity problems. Another thing that happened is there was this pandemic assistance loan. I think it was like a PPE loan. I forget exactly what PPE stands for. But that was for essentially meant to be for small businesses. And a lot of sex workers are small businesses. They mm-hmm. declare their file taxes as independent small businesses.
Yeah.
But there was a major exclusion we came to learn in the PPE rollout, which is no prurient businesses were included. Oh. So no sexual... No businesses of sexual nature were eligible for these small business loans. And it's kind of wild because that can touch erotica, it can touch sex toys, it can touch like all of the background workers who make porn happen, it can be the light tech, you know? Like,
oh my gosh.
All of the people were just completely excluded from that. So it just created like a real chaotic moment of strippers, like, what do we do? I don't know if I qualify. I don't know if I'm an employee. I'm afraid if I file, then I might get in trouble with my employer. Mm-hmm. I was personally worried because I was like, I don't know if they're filing for me. And then if I show that I'm on the books and then my employer gets caught for improperly filing taxes and not including me in that taxes, mm-hmm. then maybe they could retaliate against me
yeah.
later on. It was just deeply confusing and really revealed how insecure of a workforce we are because we don't have those protections. I mean, thankfully, a lot of strippers were able to get pandemic unemployment assistance, and they continued receiving like regular payments until pretty recently, until this year. So it was just a really hectic time, and people took creative, they got really creative. So another thing that happened was that groups of strippers started getting together and putting together these online shows, these virtual events. So they would get together, set up a Zoom room, and create all kinds of advertisements, and then they would put on online strip shows, invite their regulars who they used to see at the club, or friends, honestly, whoever they allowed to be, see their social media, they would invite to these shows. And people would show up, and they would tip and enjoy everything, and they became really popular. It became a way for people to socialize, to, you know, get to see faces that they weren't able to see because we were locked down and all of that. So it became a really important creative outlet and also an important source of income for strippers throughout the pandemic. It certainly wasn't, at least for me, like what I used to make at the club, but it was like, it was steady income. And I didn't have to risk getting sick to get that income.
Yeah.
And it was also fantastic because it really forced strippers to collaborate and pool together their resources and their insights. And so it was just like a real show of solidarity and group power and like what you can do whenever you all get together.
Yeah. As you said, like there was so much creativeness and like innovativeness to come out in all sort of industries. So it's it's good to hear that sort of the sex work industry was part of that creativeness. That's really interesting. So sex work is legal in Australia, but brothels and street sex work is not. How does that differ in California? I know you've talked a little bit about it, and what are your comments on why sex work should be decriminalized, not only in the US in some states, but internationally? It's a loaded question.
I mean, well, okay, so I could start with federally in the United States, sex work is criminalized. In California, it's a little bit different. So not entirely, though. So it's still not legal to sell sex, but there's been a push lately as far as in the prosecutorial realm to move away from bringing criminal charges or having like a major criminal case against sex workers. I will say that people still get in trouble for prostitution here. There are still people who catch cases for that, but overall, the will has been against crackdowns on sex workers, and so it's gotten to be a little bit better. They also, there are all kinds of messed up laws. So another law that was really messed up in California was essentially called this condom law, and if you had like three or more condoms, you're carrying three or more condoms, and you were essentially caught walking, you could be charged for prostitution. Now, it doesn't matter if you're not a sex worker. It doesn't matter if you just were trying to have a great night that night. And on the flip of it, you know, we should want sex workers to be protected.
Yeah.
A lot of people have this misconception that we're completely disease-addled and da-da-da. But it's like nobody cares more about sexual health than a sex worker because it is literally your life.
For sure.
If you have any illness, then it costs you your work, it costs you your living. You have all of the stakes to be safe and healthy versus somebody who's just feeling randy and like wants to get down. Like they're going to make all kinds of bad decisions. I have so many clients who try to, you know, say, oh, I think you're clean. So let's just have sex without a condom. I'm like, what are you saying? You're absolutely insane right now. Like, do you understand how you sound?
My gosh.
But anyway, so there were a lot of, there have been a lot of bad laws. Thankfully, they took, they repealed that condom law. They're trying to create another one that would essentially decriminalize loitering with the intent of prostitution, because it's like another law that exists, mm-hmm. or another prosecutable offense in California. So they're trying to take that away. And that bill is currently on the governor of California's desk. Hopefully he will sign it. We are petitioning for that. So okay, there are many ways to handle sex work. The main problem is that with legalization, just because you legalize something, it doesn't mean that you believe in it, that you think you should protect those people, or anything. Like, you could just legalize something because you want to heavily regulate it. It's not like it takes away people thinking sex workers are dirty or that they are, you know, making a bad decision, or that they need to be watched over, or that they, you know, don't deserve full rights, or that they shouldn't be around children, or that they, all of these things, you know, mm-hmm. like strippers, we're legal, but we're still treated like criminals. We're still, like in like the San Diego law, you still have to go register with the police as if you're a criminal. You know, if I try and get a job and I list stripper on my resume, I'm probably going to face discrimination.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, you don't remove the discrimination just by legalizing something. You're probably going to carry that discrimination into the way that you regulate the thing that you've legalized. And so that happens a lot with legal prostitution in other places. Sex workers are essentially treated like criminals. They kind of end up a lot of times forced into less central parts of the city. They're forced to work away from things like schools or you know, places where that are safe or where families might be.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of forced into a seedy part. There's also a lot of heavy regulation around bodies, like really invasive exams and testing. Which I think is a major issue to your right to privacy, honestly. And then the other thing is that a lot of times institutions that end up housing this, because it's still considered vice, even if it is a legal vice, they're allowed to charge extortionary rates for things. Like, they can take 50% of every dollar you make.
Wow.
You know? And that's what happens at the strip club. For every dance that I sell, the club takes 51%.
Oh my gosh.
And it's hard to imagine brothels not taking a similar percentage that is still remarkably high, unless there's like a major regulation put in place to stop them from taking more than a certain percentage.
Mm-hmm.
There's also inevitably, like, you know, certain hush money that ends up paid, for whatever additional things. Like, sometimes it's like because you want to serve alcohol, and then there's like all kinds of red tape around serving alcohol. In California, for example, if you're a bikini club or a topless club, you're allowed to have a bar with alcohol, and you're allowed to sell that alcohol, and you can be open until 2 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to, on the flip of it, you have to stay 6 inches away during dances. You're not allowed to remove your top whenever you're, unless you're on stage, 6 feet away from customers.
And oh my gosh.
There's all kinds of other ridiculous things. So it's just like they make these really ridiculous rules because it's typically made by people who don't understand the industry,
yeah.
who have like inherent biases against it, who are skeptical of why it should exist at all to begin with, and who are playing to a lot of conservative ideas mm-hmm. because of conservative lobbying groups.
Yeah.
At least in the United States.
Yeah.
So you end up getting this really mixed up, ineffective, cumbersome situation whenever you legalize these things. And especially in the United States, we are not known for laws that make sense. we have a really messed up criminal justice system, and we have just a generally very messed up government system that is just completely terrible.
Yeah.
So I don't want these people to try and regulate this industry.
Of course.
Because they can't even build good roads. They can't even make a train system. Like, how are they going to have a nuanced discussion about sex when we don't even have consistent sex ed in my country?
Yeah.
So
how does that work?
Exactly. Like, if you can't have, like, if you can't do the basic stuff, if you can't crawl, you can't run a marathon. And this is kind of like proposing the crawlers run a marathon. So that's why sex workers advocate for decriminalization, because it's just saying that what you do with your body is your choice. Where you do it is your choice. If you get paid for it, it's your choice. You set the parameters. And it is so deeply personal. Like, we're trying to regulate sex and sexual touch, and there is nothing that is more intimate. And so have all of these nitpicky, you can do this but not this and that and
yeah.
that on this day and not this hour but the book, it just gets to this really mucky place that is just not good. But just making sure that people are not sent to prison for these personal decisions that they make
mm-hmm.
is what makes the most sense to me.
Yeah, of course. And last question. What is your advice to people who want to become activists about an issue they are passionate about?
Well, I would say start to learn the history of the movement that you're interested in, if you're able to, and start to look to other activists to inspire you, and see if you can join a bandwagon that exists, because there's a lot of great work that's being done by a lot of fantastic activists. And what I do mostly is, like, I spend so much time just learning.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just want to know I want to get to know the scene. I want to get to know all of the facets of it so that I can talk about it to people who know nothing, who don't know me, who don't know why I would care about this, who really don't care.
Yeah.
Oh, I can break it down and just make it accessible. So a lot of it is learning. A lot of it is learning to collaborate, learning that you don't have to be the one who's, you know, the first person on the moon of this issue. There's probably other people who have come before. And there's probably a really rich history that will, you know, kind of guide your path on where you want to go and where people have gone before and what, you know, pitfalls they've experienced. Along the way, so you can learn and do better and continue, you know, making things better.
Yeah, no, I love that. Thank you. Well, thank you so much, Lena. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I've enjoyed listening to you and getting to know a bit more. Even me, I had sort of no idea what sex work was like, but no, I think it's really important that we understand people's choices and respect them. So no, thank you. I really, really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
If you would like to follow Selena the Stripper and learn more about what the sex work industry is like, please keep listening for their social media handles.
If you want to follow my Patreon, I am at The Real Pretty Boy Girl.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, as of the recording of this episode, my organization's Instagram has been taken down because we've explicitly talked about sex work, unfortunately. But hopefully we will be back up, and that handle is at soldiers_of_pull_. And you can find out all kinds of interesting things about what strippers are doing in the United States, but also beyond. I mean, our furthest member is out in New Zealand, and she is a fabulous Kiwi. Come check us out there. And if you want to check out our website, the website is strippersunited.org. And it's great. I would champion the redesigning of that. So come check out my work.
Amazing. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've You've been listening to the UON Crim Podcast, hosted by Jessica Horn and run by the University of Newcastle Criminology and Criminal Justice Society. I would like to thank today's guest, Selena the Stripper, and to the podcast team, Nick Minch and Zalia Windham. Please stay tuned for our next episode, released on the 2nd of May. You can stay up to date by following the UON CCJS on social media. See you soon!